Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. Today, we get to hear the voice of a demon. Not Fauci, different one. CEO from Pfizer. Basically admit, yeah, the mRNA decision took him by surprise. Admits that they had never even used it yet. So let's listen to that. This is Bourla off of a friendly interview. So remember, this is CEO Albert Bourla, and he's having a friendly interview with Dr. Lori Esposito Murray, president of the Committee for Economic Development, the Public Policy Center of the Conference Board. I have no idea what that is, CED. I don't know where she is, but it's a CED discussion series, Leadership in Challenging Times. And so it's a very friendly interview, and she's just, you know, smiling like a Stepford wife at this opportunity, and just how much amazing, what an amazing accomplishment this is. So I'm going to let you listen to the early part right before then, so you don't think I've miscontextualized the question, and that maybe he's not answering the question that I would otherwise be making you think that he's answering. So we'll let the previous answer play just shortly so you can hear her full question and then his answer about it.
Pride for the job that they do. And without that, I don't think we would be able to accomplish what we did. So to answer your question, the organization was ready.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment, especially for a company as old and as large. And you mentioned courage. Making the decision to pursue the mRNA technology was really bold and risky. And you were actually an original skeptic. So share with us how you made that decision, especially given the stakes.
Basically, it was trusting my people. When they told me mRNA is our solution to what you are asking us to do, which is we want a vaccine, very effective, very safe, very quickly. I was puzzled. That was a very counterintuitive decision. You know, Moderna is very good in doing mRNA. So for them, the decision would be only, are we doing a vaccine for COVID or not? Would never be what technology to use, because this is what they are very good. In our case, we were very good in multiple different technological platforms that could give a vaccine. So that was the number one decision that we had to make. And there was no other medicine or vaccine that was successful by the time that we made the decision, let's try this technology to bring a COVID vaccine.
There's the admission. We'd never even done it before, not successfully. You think it's a little bit of a non-intuitive decision? We're gonna get to some context behind this and to decide, hey, we've never had it successful. Let's try it on the thing that's going to affect most of the world with a brand new technology where we tell the body to do things. Sure hope we've done it right. Sure hope our instructions are right. Sure hope it gets preserved right in between manufacturing and getting to the body. So anyway, let's keep listening to this garbage by this demon.
So that was quite counterintuitive, as I said. So I challenged it. Are you sure? And then they came and we had very, very, let's say, deep discussions over a couple of days, not over a couple of months.
Very, very deep discussions over 2 days. Oh, yeah. Oh, we're ready. We're ready. But what about all the things we don't know yet? Listen, we're ready and it's been 2 days. Okay, we're going to do this or aren't we? You going to do this? Let's do this. Messenger RNA, a bunch of mysteries. We never even done it successfully. We're going to be giving it ideally to hundreds of millions or billions of people. Let's do this. 2 days is enough. Come on, man. Can we get out of here already?
Where we really understood where we are with the technology, what are the limitations and unknowns, but also what are the benefits. And the fundamental was that if we were to be successful with this technology, it became clear to me that that would be a superior answer.
Notice how he didn't say why. Well, what's the benefits? Well, the benefits are, I clearly concluded that the benefits were that it was superior. Isn't that kind of not answering the question? What are you talking about? But there are also benefits. And the benefit was that I clearly concluded after they gave me the information that this was a superior answer. And that's a non-answer. Okay, let's listen to what other garbage he says. By the way, I have a previous episode where I absolutely take apart his nonsense. Look for that if you just Google Borla. I'm sorry. If you search for Borla in my episode, you should be able to find it.
Higher risk, but higher reward. And they convinced me that they felt that the technology is mature enough. We have it. We will crack the nut with that. And I said, go ahead.
Higher risk, but higher reward. Isn't that the entirety of it? Well, they convinced me. I mean, okay, I guess. You guys insist. So what I want to say around that is also that the quote from the friendly video here, which is, it says, nothing of what was accomplished would have been accomplished without partnerships. In our case, we had to partner with BioNTech, but we also had to partner with the FDA and the CDC, Without their active collaboration, without our active sensing of the way that they worked as well, we wouldn't be able to achieve what we achieved. And so this is something that goes to a phenomenon that is very clear to me as a libertarian. If businesses had to just work the risk on their own, it would be a lot bigger, more dramatic deal, and they would fall on the side of caution much more. But when you're hand in hand with the alleged regulatory agencies, it's almost like just the slow burn of, come on, man, we've been talking to you about this, is a substitute for what would have been a clean analysis if they were truly adversarial, or if they simply weren't there, and then the clean analysis is the actual results itself and whether or not you get your ass sued off. And so what happens, and I know I've been in the public sector, is that you go, man, anybody with a brain can tell this is a horrific solution. Me and five IT guys, if there was a Home Depot for IT guys, I guess it'd be Indian guys out front, I don't know. I'm not being racist. I'm giving them credit. Me and five IT guys from IT Home Depot could do 95% of the work at 1/1000th the cost. So how much more do we need to have a horrific solution that is just simply a little bit, how much more do we need to spend to have a horrific solution that is just a little bit better than the solution that we could have given at 1/1000th the cost? And so it's kind of like that. So the thing is, it becomes a big giant exercise. But the person who's not really the doer is kind of hand in hand with them. And so because they're witnessing the whole time, you've almost turned them into an accomplice, if you will. But I don't even mean that in the criminal sense, though there is that. I just mean like, come on, man. I mean, you could have stopped at any time and you didn't. You've been here the whole time. We're telling you how we're going to do this. And so that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. They feel more comfortable because the FDA is right there basically giving them tacit approval that they can then back up with as far as whether or not they'll get their asses sued off of. They'll get their asses sued. The next thing about this is the next question becomes, well, what else could you use it for? I believe we're at the end of the answer here. Let's listen. But I believe we're now where she's going to answer, well, what else? It's just an absolute Stepford Wives idiot. Okay, hold on.
So take us forward. There's a lot of discussion about how the mRNA platforms may actually have an impact on the future and our approach to health, better health solutions. Can you give us some insights into where we may be going with this?
All right. Now here you're going to hear the point I've told you in many, many podcasts. The thing about the FDA approval, does not matter about effectiveness versus the old version. They'll just approve it. It could be 50% more effective? It could only be 75% more effective. It's just, quote, is it effective? There's no price to effectiveness analysis done. And so after it gets approved, which it almost invariably does, you can go listen to the worst case scenarios, my really old podcast. Well, I mean, in comparison to one of my to all my podcasts, Pick Your Poison, about a Roundup. And I have another one that's a really good one as far as the FDA, and they're just ignoring advisory board for the PSA tests. So the prostate specific antigen test for prostate cancer. Hey, surprise, surprise, it's not specific to the cancer. It's only specific to the prostate. So the test itself, the results is only specific to various things that the prostate does and various variabilities. It is not specific to cancer in any way, shape, or form, any more than just rolling of a dice would be indicative. So look to those ones as well, as far as, the fact that the FDA will approve something when the entirety of the advisory board either says, you shouldn't approve that, or, some of them just decide to not vote, and they'll still approve it. And so you'll hear here that the idea they're working off of is that basically we're going to try to get the new technology applied to all vaccines. Okay, here you go. He's going to say a little bit of garbage up front, like, oh, you can't do this with it, and you can't do that with it. But eventually we'll get to the mRNA for vaccines part.
Of course. The technology, I think, is just starting to scratch the surface of what can deliver.
Oh, you think so? Since this is the first time you used it, and it's a piece of shit? You think maybe it's just scratching the surface?
I want from the get-go to say it's not going to be a panacea. It's not a technology that will resolve everything or medical needs that we have right now. But it is a technology that will allow us to bring solutions to things that we were not able to bring before.
Oh, wow. Boy, this guy's a real scientist. Oh, that's...
Not all, but to some.
Wait, you're saying that sometimes things apply to only some of the things and not all of them? Whoa, I see why you're a CEO, Amanda Borla. That's not right. What's his name?
This is a technology that could give us, for example, better vaccines beyond COVID.
There you go.
We have a lot of vaccines. I think we can get way better vaccines for some of the diseases that is very difficult to get good vaccines again.
Boom. There you go. They want to replace every single vaccine with approved and shown to be effective messenger RNA that's still entirely unproven. But it's been approved. These are, so they'll be pushing incentivized issues. They will, with all of their extra money that they have, because every time you turn around, now something is sponsored by Pfizer and BioNTech because we publicly subsidized our ruination and heart attacks and strokes among our young ones and our middle-aged folks and other people that are dying suddenly. So with that publicly subsidized money that none of us voted on, thank you, President Trump, and then this idiot criminal non-president as well, they now have so much money they don't know what to do with it, and they are going to be able to push out all kinds of information on, oh, of course this needs one of our fancy schmancy messenger RNA vaccines that we are going to charge five times as much for as the old vaccines, because hey, we can just give instructions and not even have to have the species isolated, because remember the COVID vaccine, you started working off the vaccine once it was just put into some information bank on the internet. Go look up the Wikipedia if you don't believe me. It's in the timeline. The Chinese put it up on the internet and the Americans started working on it. So yeah, now we can just say, oh, it's the best and the greatest. And now we don't even have to go get the original sample and try to recreate enough of it. Nope, don't have to do that. We can just create some instructions. So yeah, messenger RNA, any number of vaccines. This is a $1 trillion business at this point. This transference to messenger RNA, if we don't punish these people for the deaths and injuries that have occurred among what I know to be millions of people across the globe now, every time I turn around, I hear another story about a heart valve situation. I've said this in other episodes. The most recent, it's the first time I've solicited, but I was telling somebody about the documentary, and they said, yeah, I got a nephew who has heart valve problems now. It was post-vaccine, and now he can't run. He's in his 20s. At work, he will get winded, and so they have a rule at work, and this might be hearsay. It was UPS, or it is hearsay, so I don't know if it's true. UPS or Postal Service, they said, hey, if you got a COVID vaccine, you need to set for 15 or 20. Just do it if you're feeling the effects of that. Now, is he misstating, and they're actually probably just saying the same thing about, oh, maybe you got long COVID, and they're not admitting it so straightforward. But presumably that came from the horse's mouth, the worker, that they just let you set for 15 or 20 minutes in the warehouse because they know, you know, now – working age people can't be trusted not to have to, you know, rest for 15 or 20 minutes like they're 75 because their cardiovascular system is being filled with white fibrous tissues, protein structures. And if your cardiovascular system is being filled with white fibrous protein structures, guess what is not delivering oxygen very efficiently? And that entire system. And so what is not getting oxygen efficiently? Your entire body is not getting oxygen efficiently. And a little bit of background on that, I said this in the other episode, is how some of these embalmers starting understanding this is that they use the arterial system to deliver the embalming fluid, and it wouldn't take the fluid, the normal amount of fluid they're used to putting in. It just simply, the body would not take it. And then they started investigating as to why. And that's when they found the white fibrous structures that they had never seen before that take on the shape in some cases of the arteries that they're in. You'll pull them out and they'll look like, offshoot root, you know, kind of like a tree branch, if you will, getting down to the smaller and smaller twigs. It will look like that, these white fibrous structures given enough time. So yes, oh yes, we can absolutely replace the vaccines where these will be the better ones, of course. No, they're not. They're definitely not. They're inelegant. I've mentioned it before. There's no limitation on how many might be produced when before there was an inherent limitation. It's how much of the inactivated virus you put in the body. It's clearly causing all kinds of issues. And it's not even the whole virus. So instead, you are having the body create who knows how many numbers of only one part of it. And are you going to continue to have the body create the worst part of the threat? And who knows how many are going to be created? Oh, so let's listen to the rest of whatever he says about mRNA and then let this demon shut his fat mouth.
The second is that the technology first was pioneered to treat cancer, not to make vaccines.
And it's been not useful at all. I guarantee you. Remember, he said they haven't even used it before now. But now, oh, yeah, it'll be great for cancer. Oh, the other massively subsidized billion-dollar industry that still never gets solved. So that'll be the new technology for it, too. And it being the new technology for cancer, hell, if somebody gets cancer, it is going to cost the public in the range of $75,000 to $1,000,000 or $2,000,000 or $3,000,000, depending on how long the treatment is. Almost none of that of which the person themselves can afford. Almost all of it is insurance or taxpayer money, through public insurance. Almost none of it can the person even come close to affording out of pocket. And now wait until we get, the newest cancer treatment. Now, granted, some of the cancer treatments are horrific. Go listen to my episodes on AZT, literally a chemotherapy that was failed because it was too toxic. And then the demon fear cheese said, hey, this is what you should take preemptively. And so a bunch of people had massive misery and died. Some of them died from it. And that seemed like one of the bigger catastrophes in public health in a long time that was still mostly swept, mostly the rug was pulled over. But now this has, of course, been dwarfed by this absolute catastrophe. Like, it's probably millions by now. It's 20 to 50 to 100 to 1,000. 1,000 might be a little bit much. You know, Vietnam Wars. Let's see what else this idiot says.
It is a lot of work against cancer is happening right now. We don't have anything successful so far.
What did I just tell you? I hadn't even heard that yet. Of course they don't. But don't worry, if they get to collaborate with the FDA and whoever, then maybe they'll get to just kind of, you know, these are not the droids you're looking for. These are not the adverse events you're looking for. The regulatory agencies into, well, geez, you've been talking with us the whole time. Isn't this good enough? We've been working on it for so long. You know, it's a long trip. Aren't you tired? Aren't you tired of trying to enforce this as we go this whole time? You probably are, right? And so let's just go ahead and get this done, right? And let's just finish this.
But the chances that we will see success through that are quite high, I would say. And
yeah, I mean, of course, because he said it, and there's quite a specific number he gave and the reasons why, right?
We will know in the next couple of years. The third area that this technology can be used, it is for genetic diseases. Diseases that are due to a mistake in the human genome.
Isn't that interesting? Because right now it seems as though they have adjusted some people's. I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying that if a fibrous structure is growing, it's growing from some source. And if it's growing from some source, what does that mean as to the general body? And if these white fibrous structures are what we see and it's really big and obvious, what else is going on? And as they talk about, oh, the genome, of course, they always ignore the epigenetics, which is basically switches on and off based on environmental factors. And epigenetics are a huge part of genetics. They'll keep going, you are your genes. You are your genes, because even things like good nutrition and exercise can switch the epigenetics that make all the difference in the world. So there'll be more of that, and that'll be more, even more expensive because it's, quote, gene therapy. But wait, I thought it wasn't gene therapy. I thought it wasn't gene therapy. Remember? Remember, it's just a vaccine. It's not gene therapy. Wait, mRNA, we'll be using it for gene therapy. Let's back this up just a little bit.
Genetic diseases, we will know in the next couple of years. The third area that this technology can be used, it is for genetic diseases. Diseases that are due to a mistake in the human genome, in our code. Instead of the letters being in the right order, one or two of them in our DNA have flipped the order. And that can create diseases to those, unfortunate, that have that mistake, that usually are extremely difficult to treat. And some of them are fatal. This technology, for the first time, will allow us to edit the mistake.
Okay, so I want you to hear that for a second. They're saying that the same technology as gene therapy, messenger RNA, delivering messenger RNA to the body. But they're also saying we're not there yet when it comes to actually applying it to gene therapy. They just admitted out loud that the gene therapy is not ready yet, even though it's the exact same vehicle and the exact same material that we just put in the vaccine. So how many times did you hear, mRNA is not gene therapy, shut up? Well, it is. It's exactly what you're saying. It get into the cell and have protein structures change. Now, granted, it could be more than that. Like if it's the basic DNA, I mean, that's going to be horrific. They will not perfect it. They will not understand all the side effects. They will ignore all the side effects. Listen to all my episodes on how they flip out trial data. And you don't know how many participants were there to begin with. And it's not even that, you know, they wait for some trial participants to drop out. No, no. They will literally say, okay, we had 700 participants and one of the worst adverse events is this. And if we just lose five of those positives for that adverse event, it's no longer statistically significant. So they will lose a targeted five participants and just push them out. And so there'll be 695 participants. And so the most eye-catching adverse event is now no longer statistically significant. So if you want to know the truth about the trials, then go look at these adverse events that are very close to statistically significant, but somehow not. I'm not saying there couldn't be other things that they do other tweaks with that would be well below statistical significance as far as what they show. It's a very simple solution. You say how many participants start, and for any that leave, you have to give an open record of exactly why they left and whether or not they had any adverse events. You don't get to take them out without our viewing, and any and all trials simply have to be published. The data, I mean, at least the data. Maybe you don't have to publish the whole article on all the trials, but all the data from all the various starts and stops of the trials have to be published. You're using public money almost always. You're using public money. And since you're doing that, then no, you've got to publish it. All right, guys, that's it for me. But yeah, that's quite the admission, right? Hey, it's gene therapy, but we're not quite ready. But when we do, we'll be able to edit. But it's the same vehicle. You've literally said it's the same vehicle, mRNA. And when people say that's gene therapy, and then you also admit, oh, it goes into the body and tells the body to create instructions, to create proteins. You're like, no, not gene therapy. Yeah. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Yeah, that's quite a piece of work, that Borla. And don't worry, I mean, when you have a tyrant, you'll also have the tyrant be really vehemently upset about how bad other people are doing by not listening to what he said is the right thing to think and to do, just like our non-elected president. And there's plenty of clips out there of Borla just bashing how dare you say there's anything wrong with our solution. How dare you put your mother at risk by questioning whether something that was given to 5 billion people in record time might have adverse effects. How dare you have any question about the world's largest subsidization anytime recently outside of war, like literally war weapons. All right, guys, thanks for listening.